Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, gather round the radio. It's time now for another installment of A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups. My name is Michael Harrison. It's my privilege to serve as anchor of the program. It's an ensemble show with lots of good people around the table and very interesting information, useful information for a better life. Of course, the host of the program is its founder, Carol Marx. Carol Marx is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues, and she's a champion in the battle against ageism. And we're going to kick this hour off with Carol Marx in conversation with Ruth Tarantine. Ruth Tarantine serves as the chair of online nursing graduate programs and nursing faculty at a private university. She has 25 years of nursing experience, and she's going to talk to Carol about her new book, which is titled Against All Odds, How to Move from Provider-Centered Care to Patient-Centered Care, published by Incredible Messages Press.
Now, you said that one of the first things that we all must realize when you or a loved one enters the healthcare system is the fact it's broken. And this has happened largely because up until very recently, healthcare was provider-centered. And in provider-centered care, what two vital entities are left out of the so important decision-making?
Correct. Healthcare is broken. We know that it's been broken for a while. The Institute of Medicine reports over 100,000 deaths per year related to medical errors. There's a lot of change going on in the country right now. For instance, within the past week alone, there are 14 medical schools that have changed their curriculum so that they can improve the education they provide to physicians. Along with that, nursing education programs are revising their curriculum as well. So jointly, we realize that we need to change the way we deliver education to providers so ultimately patients can receive better care. Up until now, patients were relegated to the role of recipient when they walked in the doors of a hospital and not of partner. And historically, we've all put a lot of faith in the healthcare system, depending upon the age of the patient entering the hospital. Sometimes they were taught to have blind faith in the provider and believing that the doctor or nurse knew best. And they still may know best, but it's really important that they take into consideration the values, the preferences, the beliefs, the needs, the wants of that patient. Because unless the patient has buy-in to that plan of care that provider is delivering, that plan of care is going to fail. And we know that. Research has proven that time and time again. So patients need to have buy-in and participate in their care in order to have better outcomes.
Now, Ruth, you were a nurse for 25 years when your mother became seriously ill and was hospitalized. And didn't you almost immediately have to challenge one of your mother's doctors who, before surgery, wanted to put a DNR code on her chart, and you wanted a full code? So what's the difference between the two codes, and how are you able to stop the resident from putting a do not resuscitate code on the surgery consent form? Because doesn't that illustrate what patient-centered care should be all about and isn't always?
Correct. Patient-centered care obviously has to do with what the provider or what the patient wants all the time. It depends on what the patient and or family, if the patient is unable to speak, wants. In the case with my mother entered the hospital. She was 81 years old, and she was a vibrant 81-year-old. Yes, she had health problems. I mean, she was a long-term diabetic and an asthmatic, but it didn't mean that she was ready to die, basically. And she was having surgery, and they talked to me about having her a DNR, a do not resuscitate, meaning that if something were to happen, that they would not resuscitate her. So if she were to stop breathing or if her heart were to stop, they would not resuscitate her. They would let her die a natural death. Well, oftentimes when you have surgery, things that go wrong have something to do with the anesthetic agent. And so in most hospitals, when someone is having an operation, that even if they had a do not resuscitate order prior to then, the do not resuscitate order is not in effect when they have surgery because they realize that that because of the anesthetic agent, a lot of things can happen. But in my mother's case, because of her being 81 and they considered her very high risk, they wanted me to sign a do not resuscitate form prior to the operation. They were convinced that at 81 years old that I should not keep her alive any longer. My mother and I spoke about this often, and my mother always wanted everything done. And she was a very religious woman, and she believed that when it was her time, it was her time. But she wanted everything done. And so when the doctor came to me and asked me if I would sign this, and I explained to him that my mother and I were just on a trip a month ago to the Bahamas. My mother was still going to church, driving, going to the grocery store, cooking big Sunday dinners, that my mother was very active. And he kept saying, I understand, but she's 81 years old. And I said, my mother just posted on her Facebook site last week. And he said, your mother has a Facebook site? I said, she does. And he said, well, that changes everything. I don't even have a Facebook site. I can't believe she has a Facebook site. Well, okay, if she's that active, we'll make her a full code. And at that point, my heart sank. I thought, what is the world coming to? There's no correlation between a Facebook site and a quality of life at all. And the fact that this Facebook site gave my mother's life value was truly sad. And I remember 20 years ago when I was an ICU nurse fighting for people's right to die. And at that time, having a DNR, a lot of patients or family members would choose to have a DNR, and we would have to fight ethically for that patient to get the right to die on their own terms. Fast forward 20 years later, and now I'm fighting for my mother's right to live. And it was paradoxical.
It sure was. And during your mother's 2.5-year medical journey, she suffered numerous negative events, which are usually caused by medical personnel or procedures that develop through exposure to the environment of a healthcare facility. And I'm sure this happens often, unfortunately. And it really, you know, I was so surprised when I learned that one of the worst of these events for your mother was something I never would have thought of, and that was a stage 4 bed sore. And doesn't that point out the fact that family members and staff need to really thoroughly examine a patient at all times?
Correct. And again, when we go into the hospital and the patient goes into the hospital, as loved ones, the most important thing we can do for that loved one is be there, be present. Being present to make sure that your loved one gets turned every couple hours is very important. We all think that if we're not healthcare providers, we can't possibly help our loved one. You know, we're not a nurse, we're not a doctor, we can't possibly do anything. When in fact, the most powerful thing that a family member can do is be present at the bedside. Patients who have families that are present at the bedside receive better care, and that's a fact. If you talk to any doctor or nurse that works any place, they will tell you the same thing, that patients with family members at the bedside receive better care. So I can tell you that if I'm caring for a patient and I know there's family in there, that family is going to be watching the care that's being delivered. And in a perfect world, should I alter the way I deliver care if a patient has a family member there or not? Of course not. But realistically, I know that I am because I know someone's watching. And so turning a patient is so simple. Turning patients was around since the 1800s, and the value of it to get that pressure off your hip, off of your backside, is invaluable, because once you have a pressure ulcer, you know, the stages 1 through 4 depend on how deep that ulcer is. And by mother's case, the stage 4 went all the way to the bone. And once it goes all the way to the bone, it can't heal. There is no restoration of the muscle because the muscle was destroyed as well. And so my mother died with that bed sore, and that bed sore caused her pain up until the end, and she was unable to sit without pain. She had to take a lot of narcotics because of the pain. And it was something so easily preventable, and it wasn't prevented. And this happens all the time. In fact, the Joint Commission has what's called never events, and never events are events that should never happen because they realize that they're preventable. And so they're not paid for. In other words, if a patient goes into a hospital and they have a bed sore, the insurance company or Medicare or Medicaid will not pay that hospital for the care that that patient now needs because of that never event. And so it behooves the hospital to work diligently to make sure that that patient doesn't suffer a never event because they're going to lose money. And we can all think that, well, certainly they're eradicated now because if the hospital loses money, we know they're going to be on top of it. But unfortunately, they still exist because we're all human and, you know, sometimes people don't do what they're supposed to do. So the patient doesn't get turned like they should and they end up with a bed sore.
Well, you have so many excellent suggestions in your book about how a loved one or even you, if you're able to as a patient, can keep track of all the complicated things that go on in your treatment when you're in the hospital. And you talk about something that makes so much sense, especially as you go on with all these specialists, and many of them don't communicate with each other, and that is to have a binder at all times and to keep in it, you know, really the essential information, and that's a really great tool.
Well, thank you. For my mother, I found that keeping a binder was paramount. And, you know, let me just say I can't take total credit for this. When I worked in the transplant ICU years ago, transplant patients are patients that have a long journey in healthcare, and they keep track of their lab values. They keep track of everything. And they were the group of patients that taught me, as a nurse, how to keep track of your data and the importance of it. So I took their idea and did the same thing for my mother. And I quickly learned that oftentimes I was the only person that had the data. In this era of the electronic health record with the computerized charting, we believe that everyone has access to everything. Yeah, it's a myth. Maybe someday, but we're far from that. And so not every specialist can necessarily access the data that another lab did or a note that another doctor wrote. And so it's very important that you have all the information. And many times you're the only person. When you're going across the continuum of care, for instance, if you're in a hospital and your loved one gets transferred to a nursing home or to a rehab facility, they may not have the same information. So by you having the information, you can take it along with you, and you become the historian. Unfortunately, because of many variables in healthcare, the job of care coordination most often falls into the lap of the family.
That's Ruth Tarantine in conversation with Carol Marx. Her book is titled Against All Odds, How to Move from Provider-Centered Care to Patient-Centered Care. It's published by Incredible Messages Press. For more information, go to the website healthcareagainstallodds.com. A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in just a moment.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment. Or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we're joined at this point in the program by our senior correspondent, Stephen J.J. Wiseman, Steve Wiseman, in conversation with Kate Edwards. Kate Edwards is an attorney and the daughter of former Senator John Edwards and Elizabeth Edwards. She'll be speaking about her experience as a supporter of the Advanced Breast Cancer Community and the Count Us, Know Us, Join Us program, which encourages others in the community to find the support and resources they need.
You know, how common is breast cancer?
Well, there are really two distinct types of breast cancer. We hear a lot about early stage breast cancer, which affects a large community of women. But women living with advanced breast cancer have unique kind of needs and challenges. And there are 250,000 people diagnosed each year with advanced breast cancer. So it's actually quite a large community, and they have, like I said, really very different needs, and it's a community we don't, necessarily hear a lot about.
Now, advanced breast cancer, is it advanced because that's just the type of disease it is, or is it something that perhaps with earlier screening might be able to be caught earlier?
Well, I'm not a doctor, so I don't want to.
Do you play one on TV?
But I'll tell you what I do know. You can be diagnosed with advanced breast cancer the first time you go in, but for most women, or at least for my mom, it's a recurrence of the cancer, metastatic cancer. I mean, it's a great question, because I think there was a recent survey done called Make Your Dialogue Count, and they found that upon hearing of their diagnosis with advanced breast cancer, a lot of patients felt like they could have done something to prevent the disease progression, and that's unfortunately not always the case.
Yeah. How did your mother deal with the disease?
I think it was difficult for her, obviously, as it is for every woman who's diagnosed with advanced breast cancer. She was positive, certainly. She was very much positive most days, but there were difficult days as well, of course. She really, because she didn't know how long she had left, she really focused on trying to make every day count. And that was really her mentality.
That's terrific. Now, as a family member, when people have a family member with advanced breast cancer, what kind of advice do you give them? What can we be doing?
Well, I mean, I was obviously a caregiver and a loved one and a supporter of my mom, and I think there's a lot that you can do. You can do, you can support these women on an emotional level, and that's extremely important, and also on a practical level, following their appointment schedules, running errands, things like that. Anyone who has a family member, a friend, anyone who just knows someone, maybe a coworker who has advanced breast cancer, can be part of this community. And I would actually encourage you to go to advancedbreastcancercommunity.org and find out ways that you can help, find out more about the disease, and there are a lot of resources there for caregivers like us.
What's the Count Us, Know Us, Join Us program?
So the count, last year I actually joined the Count Us, Know Us, Join Us campaign, which is a program created by about 13 cancer advocacy organizations along with Novartis Oncology to address these unique needs of the of the advanced breast cancer community. The Countess actually aims to, as we're talking about today, raise the awareness and profile of this community so that others know about their unique challenges and needs, and also to support, to encourage people to go and support and join the cause, which you can do at advancedbreastcancercommunity.org. So I'm really excited to continue my work this year and to share my experiences, and that's basically what I'm doing with Countess. But anyone can be part of Countess, and I certainly encourage anyone listening to go to that website and be counted as someone who wants to be in the community and also find out more about this advanced breast cancer community.
That's terrific. I'm sure your mother would be very proud of you, and I'm sure this kind of, it must feel good for you to turn what was, a deathly illness to her into a great legacy for so many other women.
Well, thank you very much. I mean, I think it was very important to my mom to make sure that she talked about her disease because she didn't want other women who were going through it to feel alone. So anything I can do to contribute to her work is certainly a very much a privilege.
And for the in closing, again, if people want to get more information to know how they can help or just inform themselves, where do they go?
AdvancedBreastCancerCommunity.org. So I definitely encourage anyone listening to go check it out. There are lots of resources, lots of information, and also links to these 13 cancer advocacy organizations who have done great, great work.
That's Kate Edwards in conversation with our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman. If you'd like more information, go to AdvancedBreastCancerCommunity.org. That's AdvancedBreastCancerCommunity.org. We'll be joined by Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. That's next. When A Touch of Grey, the talk show for grown-ups, continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on matchingdonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. Matchingdonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to matchingdonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's matchingdonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security websites. Pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
This is a Driving Today Minute. Even though high gasoline prices have moderated somewhat, they're still quite high. It just makes good sense to do what you can do to reduce your fuel costs. The Alliance to Save Energy suggests a few easy things you can do.
Keep your car properly tuned up and change the air filter regularly, both to save gas and protect your engine. Curtail aggressive driving. According to the U.S. Department of Energy, speeding, rapid acceleration, and hard braking waste gas and curb mileage by as much as 33% at highway speeds.
So nix the jackrabbit starts and opt instead for slow acceleration from a dead stop. Slow down. The DOE says each mile per hour you drive over 60 is like paying an extra 10 cents per gallon. Inflate tires to the proper pressure. This will increase fuel economy and make tires safer and extend their life.
This Driving Today Minute is brought to you by Bridgestone Firestone Tires. You can get more information like this at drivingtoday.com or by visiting our partners such as autobytel.com, motorsportsforum.com, and more.
You're listening to A Touch of Gray. Check out our website at atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E. That's atouchofgray.com. We spell gray with an E.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver.
If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to GoDirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do, and I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Carol Marks is one of America's leading experts on upper demographic issues and a champion in the battle against ageism in our society. Her fabulous new book, Modern Aging, A Guide for Seasoned Citizens to Achieve Health, Happiness, and Purpose, published by Talkers Books, is a major breakthrough in providing a maturing population with vital information and inspiration to live better and more productive lives. Carol Marks offers practical strategies for juggling work, romance, and navigating the healthcare system. She is a guide through the maze of grandparenting, technology, travel, and retirement, as well as facing the sandwich generation struggle of supporting adult children and elderly parents. Modern Aging by Carol Marks is available now at www.talkersbooks.com. That's www.talkersbooks.com.
If you plan to apply for Social Security disability benefits, there are things you can do to help speed up the usual 3 to 5 month wait for a decision. The more information you provide up front, the less time it'll take us to obtain the needed evidence, and the faster the decision can be made. Information like medical records or documentation, the names, addresses, and phone numbers of your doctors and medical facilities, information on your past employment, and more. To be prepared, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/disability and select Disability Starter Kits.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups. I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and we come to that point in the program where we're joined by our senior correspondent, Kevin Casey, who is also the vice president and executive editor of Talkers Magazine, the trade publication in the talk radio business that you can access at talkers.com. You know something, Kevin? It seems that the National Football League, and you and I are both football fans, and yeah, it's kind of a guilty pleasure because it does have its underbelly and its downside on a lot of levels, starting with the fact that it's pretty darn violent, but it also is extremely compelling, and I think the entire nation is addicted to NFL football. That being said, the NFL is providing our medium, talk radio, with a lot to talk about.
I'll say.
I mean, I'm laughing. There's nothing funny about it, but it's crazy.
No, it's certainly not the way the NFL wanted to kick off the season, so to speak. I mean, we're talking about a $9 billion a year industry that's being marred by the conduct of its players. And the conduct of its players is nothing new, but this time, you know, the domestic violence issues that have cropped up this year and the way the league has handled it, and in many opinions, very poorly, that's causing all the controversy.
The Adrian Peterson story that is the current hot topic, the whole subject about spare the rod, spoil the child, you know, I gave him a whooping. It's interesting how that subject, that story, has raised a subject that, depending upon when you lived and where you lived, there are different philosophical points of view about how to discipline children.
There is no question. I was spanked as a child. I was never beaten, and I guess we could then get into a discussion of the difference between being spanked and beaten, but we won't do that here. But I think what people have to realize, and what the league and Adrian Peterson is going to have to realize, is that society's opinion about corporal punishment of children is changing. And you may say, well, that's the way my parents dealt with me or their grandparents dealt with them. But the reality is in the here and now, and these days, beating children or spanking them to the point where you leave marks is not acceptable anymore. In fact, in many places, it's punishable by law.
And not only are we talking about corporal punishment, we're talking about verbal abuse.
Sure.
We're talking about people saying that you can scar a child simply by telling them they're stupid, they're ugly, they're incompetent, they're bad. There's a whole new perspective that's opening up on how to deal with the age-old challenge of raising children to make them grow up healthy, happy, and be productive, law-abiding citizens. Amazing, complicated topic. When I was a kid, I never was beaten. I was threatened with it. My father would say, "I'm going to take off the strap," and he would go for his belt buckle. Never did it, but, you know, ooh, that strap, it kept me in line.
Yeah.
And you were spanked, huh?
My mother had a wooden spoon, the kind you would use to stir your spaghetti sauce, and that was what I got on the butt when I did something bad. And, you know, it hurt. It never left a mark that I was aware of, but it stung, and believe me, I didn't want to get hit with it. So, I mean, did it work? Yeah. I mean, I didn't grow up to be scarred, but who knows? You know, people react differently to different things.
Interesting. Well, you and I should have more of a conversation about this, both being parents and certainly many of the people in our audience now experiencing grandparenthood for the first time. And that's also an interesting role. Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine, Vice President, Executive Editor of the leading trade magazine in the talk radio business. People can go there at talkers.com. Always good to have you with us. I'm Michael Harrison. You're listening to A Touch of Gray, which continues right here on this great talk radio station in just a moment.
Did you know? An estimated 16 million Americans suffer from a chronic inflammatory facial condition called rosacea, and most of them don't know it. Often mistaken for acne, there are many signs and symptoms of rosacea besides facial redness, pimples, and visible blood vessels. Other symptoms may include burning, stinging, swelling, and even enlargement of the nose. Rosacea can also affect the eyes, causing a bloodshot appearance and irritation that could lead to vision loss. Any one of these signs and symptoms can mean rosacea, and without medical help, it can become increasingly severe and wreak havoc on your personal and professional life. Rosacea typically appears any time after age 30. So if you experience any sign of rosacea, see a dermatologist for diagnosis and treatment, or for more information, visit the National Rosacea Society at rosacea.org.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best, so take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
Engine.
Check.
Thrusters.
Check.
Fuel.
Check.
Computers.
Check.
Social Security.
No check, go direct.
That's right, Patty. A few weeks ago, I went online to godirect.org to sign up for direct deposit. It's easy to do. And I got my cash at warp speed.
Wow, it's fast and easy. I'll sign up right now to make sure I'm prepared for our next mission.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, I'm Michael Harrison in the anchor chair, and here again is the host of the program, the star of the show, Carol Marks, in conversation now with Banker White. Banker White is a filmmaker. And he's going to talk to Carol about the documentary, The Genius of Marion, which is airing on the award-winning PBS series POV, which stands for Point of View. It's an intimate and courageous portrait of Banker White's 61-year-old mother, Pam, who's struggling with early-onset Alzheimer's disease. Check local listings for dates and times in your viewing area. Here now is the conversation between Carol Marks and Banker White.
Let's talk about your latest undertaking and making a film, and it involved helping your mother who wanted to write a memoir about your grandmother. And how did you get involved in helping her to do that, and why did she need your assistance in doing what?
So my grandmother Marion was an incredible artist.
she also passed of Alzheimer's disease in 2001. And so about 6 years after she passed, my mom announced to the family that she was going to write a book about her mother called The Genius of Marian. And my mom had never written a book before, but, you know, I was incredibly close with Marian. And the book was going to be more than a project to just tribute who she was, but it was going to explore what it felt like to transition as a daughter to a caregiver. And I think a way I thought at the time of my mom to kind of process kind of unresolved emotions around losing her mother. And then I think we all know, as the project evolved, that she was also starting to want to explore these changes that were also happening with her. And she started the book pre-diagnosis. And, you know, by 61, she'd received the diagnosis. And I moved back home really to help the family out, to kind of check in with my dad, how things were going, because my mom was really profoundly affected by what I would call just the shame and stigma associated with the disease. This is before she was really kind of overcome by some of the symptoms of dementia itself. And there was not that much writing happening in terms of this book project that I was so happy that she had kind of announced. You know, she retired earlier than expected, but she announced this project to everyone. So when I was home sitting with my mom and talking about Marian, and then eventually sitting and recording her, because there was not that much writing happening, was how it started. And it was for very personal reasons, but I think as the project evolved, the how she expressed herself on camera was incredibly moving, and she started opening up and talking quite openly about what it felt like for her to be going through this disease process.
And in preparing to help her write the book and then going on to make a film, doing interviews, you digitized old family movies and pictures, which I think is a great idea that more of us should do. What did you learn from doing that about how remarkable your mother was?
Yeah, that's a really great question. I identify as someone who's very close with my mother, but until we started a project like this where we really talked for hours every day, you know, starting from her childhood, I learned so much about, I guess, the details. Like, I knew that she was affected by her parents' divorce. My grandmother and grandfather got divorced when my mom was still at school and at home with them. But kind of how that affected her life and informed how important it was for her to create what she calls her own family. And her, having her say that to me, and then hearing her describe what it was like to meet my dad and all these things about her formative years, was really, really special. And, you know, a lot of people have asked me if it was difficult to work on a film about your mother going through something as
difficult.
Something as difficult as this Alzheimer's disease process is. And the truth is that, of course, the process itself is excruciating, and it offers certain points of connection. And to be working on this type of a project seemed to be a really beautiful balance to all the complicated emotions that Alzheimer's and dementia kind of bring into a family.
And through a large part of her Alzheimer's, what moved me was that she continued to have, and she had one of the most beautiful smiles that I've ever seen. That really touched me so much. And the other thing that I thought was great was the fact that your brothers and your sister, and of course your dad, all pitched in and used whatever skills they had to support your mother, and that really was remarkable.
Yeah, it has been really, you know, in some ways it's kind of a cliche thing to say that, you know, tragedy brings us closer, but in this particular case, it really did with our family, because, you know, as you said, everyone used their own particular skill set. My brother was going through his fourth year in residency in psychiatry and very much still today plays this role of being a kind of medical expert. And since there is no real good news in an Alzheimer's diagnosis because there's no really course of treatment, it's a very confusing process to go to a doctor. So to have someone to check in with to try and figure out how to really affect logistical changes from in the beginning, like taking away keys and learning how to manage someone slowly losing their dependence. And then my sister, who in her professional life was like a teacher and a school administrator, who now has three kids under five and is this incredibly warm mother to her children, but also kind of like support system for my father. She's geographically the closest and not only comes and helps him out, but she, of course, kind of like, I now have two children of my own, but at the time she was the first one to bring that kind of gift of a grandchild into the house, and that has been so healing for my parents. And then and my dad is such a loyal, loving husband who is trying to do his best, is the way to say it, because I think this whole process, if you're a primary partner and you're transitioning into the caregiving role, I think that is probably one of the most complicated and difficult things I've ever seen in terms of what it presents and what it asks of you. And he makes himself available to it, which in a way I think opens him up to, you know, becoming exhausted and in many, many different ways. And that's a big part of what we do as a family, I would say now, is and I should say circle of friends. We have a wonderful group of support network of friends that have helped out. And for anybody who's listening that has friends who are going through this, reach out. I know that sometimes it's hard because it doesn't feel the same way as some other diseases. And there may have been a period when a person who was starting to go through this was secretive about it. But the truth is, despite it seeming like a private issue, help is so crucial and critical to help, you know, anyone get through this, and kind of calling up and seeing what you can do and continuing to come by even as someone seems like they're changing and potentially might seem like they're trying to hide something from you. Because I've talked to so many families that go through that. There's this period of isolation that you feel really at a time when you need people to reach out the most. And since people have such a hard time talking about Alzheimer's and dementia, I think,
absolutely,
you know, individuals and families
and
have a really hard time learning how to ask for what they need.
And in the movie, you show, you know, how your mother could be involved in something that she really likes to do in one moment, and then for a good part of the time, just be completely isolated. And one reason I feel so strongly that everyone should see this documentary is, and I'm not going to tell you exactly what your mother had said when she was filmed at the end of your documentary, but she expressed so beautifully that she knew and appreciated how kind her family had been to her. I mean,
mm-hmm.
This piece just touched me so. It's wonderful, and it really is helpful for anyone to view who is going through a similar difficult medical situation.
Mm-hmm. That piece you're referring to at the end of the movie, too, what I find so interesting about that that's included in the movie in this period of time around when she said that is I would set her up with a camera alone in a room, and she would record these video diary entries because she knew inside so much more than was possible for her to say. And it wasn't the dementia that made it impossible to say. I think it was the how emotionally complicated it is. It was hard to bring herself to say thank you to my father, even though she was feeling it. It was hard even for her in the first couple of years to say the word Alzheimer's out loud because she was so kind of emotionally damaged by the diagnosis. So I would watch those things that she was saying kind of alone in my room the evening after she'd said them, you know, playing back on my camera. And I think it became like a really special confessional in a way for her. And I knew that for her, she knew that this was going to be communicated to the family and moreover to a large audience. You know, she's always been proud of my work as a filmmaker. And in her professional life, my mother was a social worker. And so I think that in some ways, The Genius of Marianne started as a book and has wound up in some ways being an extension of her work as a social worker, helping people find a way to talk about things that are difficult to talk about. And I think she does that quite beautifully.
Banker White in conversation with Carol Marks. For more information, go to pbs.org/POV/Genius of Marianne. A Touch of Grey continues in a moment.
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
You want a piece of me?
They're not movie tough guys, just ordinary people doing something extraordinary. They're all signed up on MatchingDonors.com, willing to donate their kidney to anyone who needs it. In the U.S., 19 people die each day waiting for an organ transplant, most of them for kidneys. MatchingDonors.com improves those odds by finding living, altruistic donors for patients desperately needing transplants. Go to MatchingDonors.com and meet some extraordinary people. That's MatchingDonors.com.
Want to stay informed when there are changes to Social Security? Subscribe to receive automatic email updates on popular Social Security web pages with the click of a button. Just visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. More than 1 million people already receive updates to the pages they're most interested in. You can too. Look for the red envelope followed by a link that says Get Email Updates. To learn more, visit www.socialsecurity.gov/govdelivery. Social Security delivers.
Hi, this is Morgan Freeman. Has anyone ever said, you're the picture of health? You look healthy, you feel fine, but that may not be the full picture. Colorectal cancer is the second leading cancer killer of men and women over 50. Since it doesn't always cause symptoms, you may not know you have it. The only way to know is by getting screened. Screening can find precancerous polyps, so they can be removed before they turn into cancer. This is one cancer you can prevent. Plus, screening can find colorectal cancer at an early stage when the chance for a full recovery is very high. Talk with your doctor and get tested for colorectal cancer. Medicare and many insurance plans help pay for screening. Get screened. Make sure you are the picture of health.
A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention.
Hi, I'm Sigourney Weaver. If you're like me, your dog or cat is part of the family, and they rely on you to take care of them. Like a family doctor, your veterinarian and staff know what's best for that special family member. So visit your vet regularly for checkups, for prevention of disease like heartworm, and for the best advice on everyday issues like flea and tick control. Your veterinarian knows best. So take the time to ask questions. For healthy pets, visit the vet.
A message from the American Animal Hospital Association.
You're age 65 and you've made your decision to keep working and delay receiving your benefits. That's fine, but don't forget about Medicare. Most people should apply for Medicare coverage within 4 months of reaching age 65. And there's a fast, convenient, and simple way to apply for Medicare in as little as 10 minutes. Online at www.socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only. That's socialsecurity.gov/Medicare only.
Continuing now with A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups, we come to the final segment of our program of this hour, and it's time for us to be joined by our senior correspondent, Steve Wiseman, once again. Steve Wiseman is an attorney, he's a prolific author, and he's an expert on scams. He's written Identity Theft Alert, published by Prentice Hall, The Truth About Avoiding Scams, also published by Prentice Hall. He has a website called Scamicide.com, and now he's here to talk about the stolen nude photos of Jennifer Lawrence and Kate Upton and numerous other celebrities. Steve?
Thank you, Michael. You know, news of the stolen nude photos and videos of more than 100 celebrities, including Jennifer Lawrence, Kate Upton, Kaley Cuoco, Kim Kardashian, Scarlett Johansson. I mention her because this is the second time she's been victimized in this fashion. And in fact, the last hacker who took her photos is doing time. He was sentenced to 10 years. But she's probably a little bit to blame herself, because although we're not sure of the exact manner by which the photographs and videos were hacked, it does appear that it was not something with the Apple iCloud itself, but really with the security of the people on their devices. Now, anyone who is able to get someone's email address and password will find it easy to gain access to that person's iCloud account, and they can then download these photographs and videos. Frankly, obtaining an email address is pretty easy task for any password, and the passwords, here's the thing, passwords obtained either from another hacked device or by often is the case, and this is why I'm mentioning it, because this is something we all should listen to and follow, and that's using the forgot password link on Apple's iCloud as well as other accounts. Now, what happens is if you go to your forgot password, you'll get a security question, and that will allow you to either get the password or change the password. Now, here's the problem. Why it primarily is that so many people have, celebrities certainly have a lot of their personal information online. When Sarah Palin's email was hacked, someone changed her password by just going to Wikipedia and finding out that she met her husband at Wasilla High School. However, the rest of us, we still have a lot of personal information that's up online. Sometimes it's just, you know, available in the public domain, particularly online, such as, you know, mother's maiden name. But there are plenty of times that the fault is not in our stars, the fault is in us, because we may have our pets' names on Facebook and social media and other information that we put out there. So here's my tip. My tip is, first of all, have that complex password, but your security question, you have to have a nonsensical answer. So if the question is, what is your mother's maiden name, use grapefruit. Grapefruit is no one's going to be able to figure out. Also, take advantage of two-factor identification protocols that a lot of websites do offer. What happens is when you try and go in, the website will then send a one-time password to you to include as a second two-factor identification. They'll send it to you as a text on your smartphone. So you have to take these kind of precautions, because it's not just celebrities who are getting hacked and losing data, information, and photos. It's all of us.
Thank you, Steve. And keep in mind that Steve is the author of The Truth About Avoiding Scams, Identity Theft Alert, both published by Prentice Hall, and Scamicide.com is a very informative website for you. Steve Wiseman, one of our personalities and experts here on A Touch of Gray. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Kevin Casey, for joining us. Thank you, Beverly Santinello, our producer on the front line, pulling all these pieces together. And, of course, a very big thank you to Carol Marks, the host and founder of the program. On behalf of all of us, I'm Michael Harrison in the Anchor Chair, inviting you to join us here next weekend for another installment of A Touch of Gray, the talk show for grown-ups.